Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the 24-hour voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello, Matthew.
The sweat-free voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
48 hours sometimes, if you're lucky.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. We discussed this in the last podcast, didn't we? And you shut me down because you didn't want to talk about it. And now it's time. Please elaborate on the fact that you were once, what, an ambassador of Right Guard?
I was. Oh, wow. Yes. I was involved in an advertising campaign for Right Guard, which included, they came over and recorded quite a lot of footage, including me on a rowing machine, me in the gym, me at training. Yeah, it was a fun day, and it was an interesting campaign, and I got a lot of free Right Guard.
So how did they come to choose you, of all the footballers, of all the goalkeepers in professional football at the time? How long are we talking, by the way? When was this?
I would have been, I reckon, 25.
Right.
And it was due to the agency that I was with at the time. They were looking for commercial opportunities, and out of nowhere popped up a Right Guard commercial. So there you go. Never made the TV, though. Must say that. It was only like a YouTube commercial. But there you go.
I tried to look for this on YouTube, couldn't find it.
Can't find it.
Sadly.
Can't find it. No,
it
was
a real shame.
It didn't last for very long, I'm not going to lie. I don't think it was the most successful campaign that they ever did, but hey, nonetheless, it was enjoyable for me.
Some good bunts out of that one?
I mean, it was okay. What do we think's good?
I don't know. I suppose for a commercial that is on YouTube, for how long?
It was one day's worth of filming.
A couple of grand, surely, in that.
I mean, look, we can't talk figures on this. It's personal information, that, Matthew. I'd rather we didn't.
Okay, well, this is Between the Sticks. I'm glad we put that to bed. We've got plenty coming up. Nations League action and reaction. Some EFL trophy stuff we are going to discuss, Richard. Even some FA Youth Cup and all the customary commentary corners, keeper capers, and rate my saves.
Papa John's Cup, as I've actually only found out today. I've been calling it the EFL Trophy. Of course, it is the Papa John's Cup.
It is. It is the EFL Trophy as well.
I know, but surely we should be calling it the Papa John's Cup. Like, they've spent money for the advertising. Like, I still call it the JPT, which I feel a bit bad calling it that, bearing in mind that was several years ago.
It's gone through so many guises, hasn't it? JPT, leasing.com, Checkatrade.
Of course, yeah. Maybe we should sponsor it one day.
Maybe. In association with Right Guard and the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Absolutely.
Autoglass, there's another one. That was like one of the first ones,
wasn't
it?
That was a long time ago. Auto windscreen. Let's just stick with JPT.
Okay. If you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so on Twitter at GKUnion. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net. In the last podcast, Richard, we spoke about Sergio Ramos being a record breaker, the record male cap holder in European football. Well, Manuel Neuer has since broken a record. He hasn't eclipsed Sergio Ramos, but he has eclipsed fellow German goalkeeping legend Sepp Maier to become Germany's record cap holder. He got his 96th appearance this week. And incredibly, he conceded 6 goals in a game for the first time in his professional career against Spain.
Yeah. When I saw the result, and I'm sure a lot of people did the same thing, you see the result flash up. For me, it was on Sky Sports News, and I had to rewind Sky Sports News because it came up down the bottom and I saw it. And I had to rewind it to make sure. Then straight away, I'm Googling it to see, oh, did they put out a young team? What was going on here? But unbelievable. And in fairness, I saw all the goals. Didn't have a chance with any of the goals. Like, horrendous defending. I don't know what's going on with Germany at the moment, but horrendous defending. But for Manuel Neuer, yeah, on a positive, huge congratulations. He is, you know, still now, and he has been for so long, everyone still considers him top three in the world. I know a lot of people still considering number one in the world. For me, he's certainly been top three for many years. A couple of tough moments in his career, obviously a couple of injuries here and there, but he looks as strong now as I think I've ever seen him. And I'll be interested to get people's thoughts on this. By all means, do let us know on Twitter your thoughts on Manuel Neuer. But yeah, for me, he's as strong now as he's ever been.
34 years old. Do you think so?
I do. I think that, you know, you kind of go through his career, and again, I'm saying this from afar. We see bits and pieces, and of course, it's very different when players are playing in the Premier League and you're seeing them week in, week out. But you kind of see it through, whether it's a Champions League or what he's doing internationally or the odd game that you see here and there. But I kind of feel with Manuel Neuer, he sort of rose to fame very early on. Lots made of him, lots spoke about him. Then he did have a tough time for a period of time. But I just feel again now, you kind of, like so many goalkeepers do, we talk about the trials and tribulations of many goalkeepers and how it can turn ever so slightly. And I felt like it did for a period of time. He didn't seem to be in those conversations where people would be talking about the best goalkeepers. And it was always, oh, Black, Ter Stegen, and maybe one or two from the Premier League, Edison, Alisson. And it seemed like for a while, Manuel Neuer has been left out of those conversations. But it does seem now that a lot of people seemingly have him back amongst the top three, top four.
He took a bit of stick after the game, and unfortunately I think it's natural that a goalkeeper does when you concede six goals, like Marc-Andre Ter Stegen took stick when Barcelona conceded eight at the hands of Bayern Munich towards the back end of last season in the Champions League. He lost his head after the fourth goal, Neuer, in this one. You could see he smacked the post, not with his boot, with his hand. And there's a great still image of him just screaming at the post because he's furious with the defence. He is the team captain, and he did make some comments after the game. I just want to get your opinion on this because I thought this was quite interesting. You mentioned Germany's form. They've only won three of their eight matches in 2020. They've scored 14, conceded 17. Now, Neuer, after the game, alluded to the fact that Thomas Müller, Jerome Boateng and Mats Hummels are out of the team at the moment. They've been exiled by Joachim Löw, basically the Germany boss, since the middle of 2019, I think it was. He spoke after the game and said, all three players could help us. They've proven that often enough in the past, and none of the three, neither Thomas nor Mats nor Jerome, have ended their Germany careers. Of course, it's a public issue, but let's just wait and see how things develop. Basically, it's the decision of the national team's coach. He's quite clearly saying that to send a message to Löw, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Look, you know, again, I won't go into too much detail as to the to what's going on within the German squad, because again, I don't have huge insight as to what is going on. What I would say is, from a goalkeeper's point of view, and there's a lot of goalkeeping captains, and a lot of you guys listening in are captains of your team. Funnily enough, I did put something out on Instagram this week about the relationship effectively between goalkeeper and manager, and more so about when a manager criticizes you or a manager gives you feedback, how you react. This kind of fits into that category as well, in that, of course, if you are the captain of a team, you want to have a good relationship with a manager. But of course, if you've been embarrassed like this and you've conceded six goals, something just for the record that I don't know anything about, given that I never conceded more than four. But, you know, if you've conceded six goals in a game such as this, then, of course, you're going to be fuming. And it's not necessarily going to be that you're making the right decision. Like, it will be an emotional reaction. This will be an emotional reaction. They've just lost 6-0. Like, he's devastated. He's the captain of his country. He's devastated. And he's felt this is the best thing to do. Now, realistically, this is only going to then heighten any tension there is within a squad, within a manager and a captain relationship. Well, that's effectively dead to an extent, or certainly going to be very strained if you've gone above their head in order to talk out. So I don't necessarily recommend this for the unity of a team. But he obviously felt something needed to be said. And if you are captain and you're getting beaten heavily and you want to have an impact and you feel like you've got the power to have an impact, then I do understand that.
Manchester City's Ferran Torres to finish scored a hat-trick in that game. The fifth player to score a hat-trick past Manuel Neuer. Ooh. I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but the other four players to have scored a hat-trick past Manuel Neuer?
Absolutely no idea. Is that the answer you thought I'd give
care
you?
Care to take a guess?
Look, they're all outfield players. Are there any goalkeepers that score? Well, there you go. I've got no idea then.
Okay. Well, Robert Lewandowski.
Okay, I've heard of him. Go.
Sergio Aguero.
Yeah.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Oh, yeah, he scored past me.
Dodi Lukebakio.
Never heard of him.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, here's a name I didn't think I was going to say two podcasts in a row. Jordi van Stapeshoef.
And it's a name that you say very well now.
The Dutch goalkeeper, Bristol Rovers goalkeeper.
Can you say it in like a slightly with a slightly Dutch twang? I'd enjoy that.
Well, I kind of did I not?
I think you can do it even more Dutch. That is such a Dutch name. Come on.
I'm not going to go full McLaren.
Oh. Yeah,
I think that's enough.
Okay, right? Fine.
We got an email in regarding the last reference to Mr. Stapeshoef. And this was from someone by the name of @Schmeichel20 on Twitter, who said, "Hello, GKU. Always enjoyed your podcast. Just would like to point out last weekend, Jordi van Stapeshoef, the Bristol Rovers' second goalkeeper, didn't play because Anssi Jaakkola was injured, but because the Finn was called up for internationals."
How do you feel? It's very rare that you're wrong.
No, I feel good about this because I want it to be known, and it should already be known, that if we ever get anything wrong, or if you want to correct us, if you want to disagree with us, if you want to agree with us, get in touch. That's why we give the contact details at GK Union on Twitter or hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Please do get in touch. And I responded to @Schmeichel20 and said, thank you. I shall read this out on the next podcast.
Do you know what you should have responded with? You should have said, thank you. That was a test. You've passed and you've won a prize.
No more prizes. We've already given away a mug. While we're on it, by the way, a cracker of a save from Van Stappershirf in Bristol Rovers' win over Chelsea's under-21s in the Papa John's Trophy, Southern Group D this week. Great save from Lewis Bate.
I love the fact that we're finding saves from the Papa John's Trophy. See, this is what the Goalkeepers Union podcast is about. And actually this, if you haven't seen it, do watch it. We've got it on our Twitter.
It is going on our Twitter later today, yes.
On our Twitter. Fantastic. Because, no, look, it is a brilliant save. It is the kind of save that if it was made in an international or a top-end Premier League game, we would be gushing over it. We'd be spending a lot of time talking about it because it is top right, powerful, good reactions, gets fingertips to it, onto the bar. We'd be going crazy over it. Roy Keane would probably say it's conventional and expected, but we would be going crazy over it. And in fact, we are because it is a fantastic save.
Any other correspondence you've had, Richard?
It's funny you ask, Ben. I have actually had one that I want to read out. There was a few that I received, but one in particular, Ben, that was enjoyable. And it was, dear Mr. Richard Lee, my name is Marcus Kraus, and I am a goalkeeper coach for the under-19 team of Stuttgart. I love to listen to your and Ben's podcast. It's like interacting with an experienced goalkeeper coach when you analyse certain situations, and I rewatch those scenes. Thank you, guys. You are doing a fantastic job. So me and Marcus had a little bit of back and forth, and no, fantastic. Sounds like he's doing a great job over there in Germany. In fact, it's a bit of a German theme today, isn't there, Ben?
You're a tool.
I did say Marcus. I will say because then Marcus actually, his next message was, I did send him an answer back. He said, hey, Richard, thank you for your answer. And of course, the name of your podcast buddy is Matthew. Sorry for that mistake. Look, Marcus, do not be sorry. This has given me hours of fun. I am so thankful. Please. Look, it's just nice that he got recognized. There's so many people that do write in and they don't recognize you, but you did get recognized this time.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Am I saying it too quick at the beginning of the podcast? Because every podcast, me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
I know, maybe you are saying it a little bit too quick, but I did enjoy that, Marcus. And keep up the good work with Stuttgart under-19s.
It has been an indifferent week or so for Bailey Peacock Farrell, the Burnley goalkeeper and Northern Ireland goalkeeper. They drew with Romania in the final international before we go back to domestic football. He made a great save in that game from Razvan Marin, but he was under a bit of scrutiny in the defeat to Slovakia that ultimately ended their hopes of going to the Euros, having previously helped the nation get to the Euros after being the penalty shootout hero against Bosnia. Bit of an indifferent time for him.
Yeah, the highs and lows of a goalkeeper. As you say, he goes from hero to not being the hero to then, yeah, fantastic save the other day. I think that for me, and where I'm pleased for him is that, look, goalkeeping, we talk about this a lot on this podcast. It is a series of ups and downs. It is a roller coaster. We touch on this quote quite a lot because it was on our podcast when we interviewed Brad Friedel, and he touched on to be a top goalkeeper for him is that you don't get too high when things are good, but you don't get too low when things aren't so good, because it's always going to come back and bite you at some time, you know. And even when you feel like you're on a roll, when you feel like everything's going right and you're playing good game after good game, at some point it will come and bite you, and it'll be at the moment you least expect, and vice versa, when things seemingly you can't keep a clean sheet for love nor money, and then you're going to keep three on the bounce. Like it happens. I think Bailey Peacock Farrell the last couple of weeks is a great case in point here, where he's gone from the adulation being the hero and then seeing how quickly it can turn and the frustration he would have felt from the goal that he did concede against Slovakia. But no, this save in particular, again, those that haven't seen it, it's a shot from distance, it's rising, it's going in the top corner, and it's a very good save. Up to his left, good agility, moves his body well, gets a step in, top hand, powerful, good palm over the bar, textbook in terms of its execution, excellent save. And for me, it's just pleasing to see that he's back in that environment, playing to a very good level, and it doesn't seem to have impacted him too much.
Curious case as well, Bailey Peacock Farrell, because the last time he played a league game was the 30th of March 2019. That was for Leeds. He got his move to Burnley, but hasn't played in the league since. A couple of League Cup outings. In the time that he's not played a league game since March 2019, he's played 15 times for his country. So he is effectively the number one. You've got Mike McGovern there, who played the second game during this international break, but he's a veteran now. He's in his 30s. Trevor Carson, Motherwell goalkeeper, also in his 30s. The other option they've got, who was in the squad, I believe, this time out, was Connor Hazard, the 22-year-old at Celtic. He had a good run of form at Dundee last season, so he might be in the running. It might be, well, it's likely to be Bailey Peacock-Farrell and Connor Hazard moving forward. But it's just funny, isn't it, when certain countries have that number one who isn't a number one for his club.
Yeah, it is. It was a bit of a peculiar move for me when he went from Leeds to Burnley, because initially he'd gone as a number three. And I mean, it has opened up slightly. And I guess the thinking behind it was that you are stepping up into the Premier League, and at some point you will be the number two. And I mean, look, that's a question that we talk to a lot of goalkeepers about. Would you rather be playing, and I say mid-championship, he wasn't. I mean, he was playing top championship. And this is where, at the time, and I did a similar thing back in the day, but I'll give reasons for mine, was I moved from Watford when I was number one in the championship to go to Blackburn as a number three. Now, at the time, I did that because I knew Ben Foster was coming in at Watford, so it was almost an opportunity to get out before I knew I'd be demoted to being a number two, effectively. So there was a reason behind mine, but I felt with Bailey Peacock-Farrell, he was well in at Leeds, it seemed, you know, and seemingly the feeling around him as a goalkeeper there was generally very positive. So I did find it a bit peculiar at the time. It has started to open up a bit, but now he is number two behind Nick Pope, who is in the running to be England's number one. So maybe he thought that Nick Pope was going to move on as well. I'm not sure. But you just feel at some point, if you are continually number two, unless Northern Ireland don't have anybody else that's of that level, but you've just touched on three or four there, that if they are playing regularly, they're going to be asking the question of the manager, why am I not involved? If I'm playing week in, week out for my club at a very good level, then surely I should be given that chance. But at the moment, I guess more because of circumstance, more because of the other goalkeepers you name, maybe aren't quite of the level of Bailey Peacock-Farrell. Of course, he's being given the run, but it can change very quickly.
Just on Burnley, while we're discussing it, Billy Mercer, we know, does some great work over at Turf Moor. But to touch on their three, it was Heaton, Hart and Pope. It's now Pope, Peacock-Farrell and Will Norris, the former Wolves goalkeeper who spent last season on loan at Ipswich Town. What do you make of that three compared to what they had before?
Personally, I think it's better, and I'll tell you my reason why. And the reason is that I don't think it would have been a happy goalkeeping trio when you've got Heaton, Pope and Joe Hart as your three goalkeepers. Look, I've touched on this a lot. Stoke City had it last season when they had Butland, Federici and Davis. You know, three goalkeepers that all should be number ones in the championship. Similarly, at Premier League level, you could argue that Heaton, Pope and Hart are all number ones. So I can't imagine it was that harmonious. It was only the fact that obviously Pope got a long-term injury, Heaton got a long-term injury, that it all kind of worked out in the end. But I think now, where you've got three goalkeepers that are very aware as to their roles within that, now don't get me wrong, Peacock-Farrell will want to play and he'll be pushing Nick Pope, and I think that Will Norris knows the situation. He's gone in as a number three. Interesting tidbit. I know you like your tidbits. Will Norris, he actually lives on the same development as me in Watford. He's moved now, of course, he's gone to Burnley, but during lockdown I would see him every day on his bike, ride past, we'd always have a little chat. Really nice lad, actually. And you mentioned he was Ipswich last season, did very well at Wolves before that. And yeah, big move up to Burnley for him. So he's no longer my neighbour.
That's a shame. Another cycling GK.
There you go. Another side. He was there with his, he always had his helmet on, very safety conscious. He would show me the route that he did. He was working hard during lockdown.
Surely you could have taken advantage of that and done some drills on the massive, great greenery bit that you have outside the palace where you live.
You know, I did think that. He could have made more of the land. You know, but I got to know him well. I invited him over a couple of times. In fact, interesting story. I met him in the West Wing. We had a game of snooker, and I got the butler to bring in some champagne. We had a bit of a catch up, and yeah, top lad.
Snooker. Right, moving on to the last save of the Nations League action. Lukas Hradecki, the Bayer Leverkusen goalkeeper, made a very good save in Finland's defeat to Wales. They lost 3-1, but he made a good close range save from Gareth Bale.
Did not to be confused with Hladki, who is at Salford.
Right.
There you go. Got nothing to do with anything, but I thought I'd drop it in because that's who I thought you were talking about initially. But
it's goalkeeper related, so it works for me.
It all works. But you're right. Brilliant save. Again, I'll try and describe it for a lot of you guys that haven't seen it. Cross in from the right, and it's that one. You go from, because the cross was reasonably deep, he wasn't doing that sort of near post. You know, you talk about the six-yard goal and then you spin into the six-yard goal. But effectively, he was doing that to an extent. He was towards his near post, moved quickly back towards his line, turned the body out. And it was the fact that the save was back on him. So as he's turned to set for the shot, and it was Bale, wasn't it, that had the connection, it's going in, it's behind him. I will say it's similar, but it's not similar. It's not quite at the level of the David Seaman Pescas Salido save. But there are similarities in that it was the reaction back on him in order to get a firm hand and scoop it out of danger. Really good save. And actually was only on second viewing, when you see it from behind, you actually realise just how good it is from... And this often happens, you know, in real time from the camera angle that you see, it just looks like a regular save. It just looks like it's hit him and gone out. But when you see it from behind, you see the skill involved in order to scoop it out. Great save.
Commentary Corner. I feel like we've gone full niche, Richard, in this particular episode. We've already touched on the Papa John's Trophy. We are now going to move to the under 21 action during the week between England and Albania. And the reason I want to touch on it is because I was watching this and it irked me. It irked me, the commentary from Paul Dempsey and Karen Carney, the former Chelsea and England women's footballer. Now, Paul Dempsey, I must say, very, very good at what he does. There isn't much in the commentating nor the presenting world that Paul Dempsey hasn't done. But I feel like they were far too critical of the Albanian under 21 goalkeeper, Marco Moller, who did make some errors throughout the game. But nowhere near enough, in my opinion, to warrant the quite condemning commentary he received at the hands of Dempsey and Carney. He let a Callum Hudson-Odoi shot slip through in the first half. It was an error, but the second half then kicks off and Carney references the lack of changes made by Albania. She says, "I think the biggest one was the goalkeeper not being changed. I'd have thought he'd been off, not just because of his injury, but because of his performance, in all fairness." Eddie Nketiah then scores to make it 2-0. Dempsey, "And it's gone through the keeper again. And yet again, I'm afraid this young man has been complicit." And he really emphasised the word complicit in England scoring. And Nketiah then wins a penalty as a result of being brought down by Mollard. It was poor. Carney, horror show from the goalkeeper. Absolute horror show. And Nketiah steps up. Mollard saves the penalty. Dempsey, ha, he actually laughed. Ha. "Would you believe it? Time for a little practice back at Colney, Arsenal's training ground. He's missed again. It doesn't matter, but he'll be furious with himself, I think. Carney, I mean, it's not exactly in the corner. Good save, decent height, but not in the corner." Nketiah does eventually get his second with a great strike. Carney, "Even the keeper, who's been shocking all game, can't get anywhere near that because it's a fabulous curled finish. I mean, he's not had the best game. But that is surely that is too much from the old DNC double act."
So I watched the second half. In fact, the back end of the first half and the second half. And in fact, I just want to give a little mention to one of the lads that I work with, who made his debut for the 21s, Joseph Bursic, who was excellent, has to be said. Made a couple of very good saves. Eddie Boothroyd made a real point of giving him a lot of love at the end of the game. Made a brilliant save, second half in particular, a little deflection with his right hand. Very, very good. So a little mention for him. But yeah, the interesting thing was I watched it. Now, I have it on mute a lot of the time now anyway when I watch, because I'll often be doing other bits and I'll be keeping an eye on the game. And I actually remember saying to myself, yeah, the penalty he conceded in the second half, I was like, oh, that's a bad decision, because he came rushing out, bit of a rush of blood, thought he could get there. And it's the classic one where the player just toes it away, like toes it 30 yards away, but did it just in time to get the contact and win the penalty. So you see it hundreds of times over. But other than that, great penalty save. Brilliant save at his near post soon after that. I think the one you touched on.
I tell you what, there's some more commentary on that as well. Hang on a second. Let's have a look at this. Paul Dempsey tried to do the keeper on the near post. Just in the nick of time, Moller got his left hand out. Karen Carney, for the first time, a good left-handed save from Moller.
Wow. So this is how... I suppose how funny it can be, because at the end of the game, I was thinking, do you know what, he kept him in that. That could have been a lot more. Now, granted, I did then see the highlights from the first half, and he could have done better with the first goal, I believe, from memory. And you mentioned there might have been one or two other bits. But this is where, even during one game, people can build up a narrative about a player and they will do whatever they need to do to find something that will fit that narrative. And I think the nice lesson here is that that's not just this example. That happens to all of us. That happens to all of us in games that we play or during a season. People like to generalize in order to tell a story about a season. You know, if they're talking about a goalkeeper, they're not going to go into the detail we're going to when we're talking about goalkeepers' specific moments in games. They would prefer just to generalize, just to put it all in one nice little ball and say that is who they are. And that's the problem for so many of you out there. It will be, someone will say, what do you think of him or her as a goalkeeper? Oh, great shot stopper, can't kick a ball, doesn't come for crosses. Wow, like that's fantastic. But that's so general and that's not actually going into any detail. And that's the issue for me watching that. And I didn't realise that was the commentary, but of course a lot of people watching, you'll feed into that. You do. We feed into Roy Keane's comments. We feed into Gary Neville's comments. And it's very easy to build a narrative. What's the narrative for David De Gea right now? The narrative for David De Gea is that, yeah, very flexible, makes fantastic saves, but he's prone to an error, you know, or he's not coming for enough crosses. And we will find whatever we want to find to feed into that narrative. And there's a danger with that, because the truth is, he is much more than that. And goalkeepers change and goalkeepers work on their game and they improve parts of their game, but we see what we want to see. And that's where something like this, it saddens me a bit because, yeah, massive night for the lad. Young goalkeeper, young Albanian goalkeeper who, on the whole, did some great things. And yet he's been slammed by the commentators.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't want to get too carried away by it, but I just felt like it was worth mentioning because he is a young lad. He plays in Italy. I think he'd come in for this game to replace the number one goalkeeper, and he's an under 21 footballer. I mean, do we need to really criticise him that much?
No, I think it's an important point because I think then, I know that a lot of you guys listening in, I know we've got a real array of people that listen in. I know there's a lot of young goalkeepers that do listen in. So I think this is more aimed towards you guys because I understand, I appreciate, I feel for you when you are receiving certain criticisms. It almost feels like it doesn't matter what you do, you cannot change the mind of someone. You know, I had it myself. For me, it was always the distribution side of things. It didn't matter that I spent, you know, hours and hours and days, weeks, months working on that. It just felt that certain coaches would always find what they wanted to see. And even when you had a fantastic day of distribution, it would be seen as a one-off as opposed to, ah, maybe he's changed that characteristic, that behavior, that technique. It was seen more as a one-off. And I just think it's a great lesson to a lot of young goalkeepers listening in that sometimes it's tough. If someone's got an idea about you, they will find whatever they need to find to back up that idea.
Well, incredibly, we are going to stick with Albania, ooh, Richard, but the senior team. And for the first time ever in the history of the Goalkeepers Union podcast, and I'll imagine the only time, you are actually agreeing to an extent,
yeah,
with Roy Keane.
I know.
This was in Albania's win over Kazakhstan. They'd just gone 2-0 up. And then the Kazakhstani Aybol Abukin tries his luck from the kickoff and catches out Etrit Berisha, the Albanian goalkeeper. Roy Keane, you wouldn't forgive him. International football, what was he doing, Ian Wright? He added, they're ready to go. Why is he not in the goal? Everyone is set out. What's he doing that far out? Mark Pugac, the presenter, said, straight down the middle. And then Keane added, it's stupid. I'm angry watching it.
He's just angry, full stop. He's angry when he sleeps. No, look, I don't agree with Roy Keane in terms of you should never forgive him. I don't agree with that particular comment. I must stress that. What I wanted to do with this actual goal was to give a bit of a lesson. I'm going to ask you some questions, okay? This is what we're going to do for this particular piece.
Sounds because, ominous.
Yeah, there's a reason that I do agree with them in that where some people I've seen have said, oh, you know, it's just a fantastic strike and no blame on the keeper. There is because of his position when it's kickoff. Now, here's my question to you. Is your position on the field, obviously you try and be as advanced as you can, but do you know why you're as advanced as you normally are as a goalkeeper?
Well, to anticipate a ball that comes over the top and you're in an advanced position to deal with that.
There you go. So from a centre, of course, their nearest striker is in their half because, of course, all of their players have to be lined up in their half. So there's no danger of a through ball from a centre. So therefore, your position is dictated by that. You don't need to have a position 18 yards out because there is no through ball. So then the next point is you will take your position according to the fact that you can't then get beaten. They can't score. And that's where he's fallen down. Look, I think this is two things. I think firstly, I think it's that he's not necessarily read the situation. I think secondly, he switched off. They have just scored. He switched off. He's not concentrating. And that's why he's been beaten. But I think positionally, he's miles off. And the reason he's miles off is exactly that. You take your position according to the opposition. You take your position according to being as advanced as you can without ever running the risk of conceding. And in this particular situation, there's just no reason for him to be that far out. My advice when they've got kickoff is 6 yards, 6-7 yards. You don't need to be any further out than that. And then I think what ends up happening, normally they play back. Their strikers will then come onto your back line. And at that point, you walk up 12, 18 yards, wherever you want to stand at that point, it's absolutely fine. But certainly four centres, I would advise you're never more than 6 yards out.
Any more questions? Or
it was actually just one question, just wasn't it? And you actually got it right. So yeah, there you go. That wasn't a series of questions like I thought it would be. I just ended up talking a lot.
Bit of a backstory to the Rate My Save this week, Richard. This one was sent in by Henry Tomlinson. And before we go any further, I must apologise to Ian Gilfillan, who sent in the previous Rate My Save from Jonas last time out. We got so carried away with talking about Jonas and the brilliant save that he made on that occasion, I forgot to mention who actually sent the clip in. So Ian Gilfillan, thank you very much for that. This one has been sent in by Henry Tomlinson. Great save from Liam Marshall Randall, 16 years old. He was playing for Basford in Nottinghamshire.
Yes, indeed. It was a fantastic save. So just to give a little bit of context, it was a penalty. So from the taker's perspective, he has fired it, whipped it into the bottom left-hand corner. He's reeling away. He's ready to celebrate, only to see the goalkeeper, young Liam, down with his right hand. So his right, bottom right, and somehow managing to get a strong hand to it. And again, I always love this because it's always done and always recorded on a phone of sorts. So you can hear the parents and again, the excitement, the moment he's made the save. Fantastic save. The moment he's made the save, everybody goes a little bit crazy, as you would. But it has to be said, again, it's another one that's back on him ever so slightly. So to have the agility, the power and the athleticism, I guess I would use the word, to get down and get his right hand to it, very difficult. Puts a lot of strain on the body, that, certainly through the shoulders, to get as firm a hand on it as he did and keep it out the net. But an absolutely brilliant save. And there is a bit of a backstory here.
There is. It did attract some attention as well. These Rate My Saves tend to get a bit of attraction from the old ex-pros. A current pro on this occasion, Ben Foster, responded because we said to Henry that we were going to put this on the Rate My Save feature. Henry said, "That's amazing, guys. He's just broken both of his hips, so looks like he might be out for a while."
I think he would be. I hope he's all right. I mean, I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you break both hips, but yeah, do hope he's all right. I mean, goalkeeping, certainly I know that a lot of the pitches that you play on, especially are when they are very firm, and certainly a lot of the guys that are playing on 3G or sort of AstroTurf or what have you, then it is a lot of impact on the hips. So I can understand, but I'm not quite sure how he'll have broken both, but I do hope he's all right.
Well, Ben Foster did ask the question, "How's he broken his hips? Poor bugger. Get well soon, mate. You'll be back before you know it. Wicked penalty save, by the way." And Henry responded saying, "He broke them making a save before lockdown 2.0. I will pass on your message." Jimmy Walker, the ex-Walsall West Ham goalkeeper, also got in touch, said, "Great save. Hope he's back out there soon." And Henry added to us later on that he's been stuck sleeping upright as he can't lie down. So, wow. Yeah, all thoughts go to Henry.
Indeed, yeah. And look, this is, I suppose, one of the things about being a goalkeeper. Unfortunately, you may well get the odd injury along the way.
Yes, and if you would like your save featured on Rate My Save, very easy to do so. Just submit it on Twitter at GK Union, hashtag Rate My Save, or on email hello@goalkeepersunion.net.
Bada boom, bada bing, it's only a keeper caper.
Richard, I'm going to give you a pick of three for keeper capers. You can have Joe Fryer in Swindon's defeat against Accrington in the Papa John's Trophy. You can have Dominic Livakovic in Croatia's defeat to Portugal in the Nations League. Or you can have Thibaut Courtois in Belgium's victory over Denmark. What would you like?
So I'm going to talk about all three, if that's okay. But I think when it comes to keeper capers, I'm going to have to go Courtois.
Courtois. This was a pass back from Nasser Chadli that slipped under Courtois' feet. And I would just like to very quickly add at this juncture, we did put this out on our Twitter, but there was a tone with the message that suggested we were just messing about a bit. And obviously by saying that it was a horrendous back pass from Nasser Chadli, which it kind of was to an extent, but saying that Courtois was not of blame whatsoever. We are well aware that Courtois has made an error. So please, less of the anger in the responses. Thank you.
I actually quite enjoy the anger. So please keep it coming. It makes me smile when I see Matthew's face. Look, I think with the Courtois one, we've seen this a few times recently, I feel, and it's a horrible one because it is a bad back pass, by the way. And I know we're sort of joking about it. It's a dreadful back pass. I don't know why defenders choose to do this, where it's like they turn, they're barely looking, and rather than just rolling it along the floor, so either you can play it out or you can go first time, it's kind of like a chip. They like whip it back to you, so you've got to deal with the bobble, and it was a poor touch. The thing is, I don't know where Courtois goes with this, because it's one where it's coming across his body, it's gone under his foot and rolled in the goal. So in hindsight, and this is where maybe goalkeepers now are at a point where they are always looking to play. They don't even consider going long of the time.
But you're Thibaut Courtois, right? You're not really in danger of losing your spot as the number one goalkeeper for Belgium. So if you launch it and if you shank it, just in one, you might get a bit of a slap wrist after the game, but you're not going to lose your place. No. So just take the risk.
I just think when it's a back pass like that, I would not even consider. But this again, look, I'm saying this as an old school goalkeeper and it makes me sound old school because I wouldn't even consider trying to take a touch. I would just be kicking that as far as I can and then I'll be shouting at the defender for such a dreadful back pass. But this is where I know goalkeeping has changed and I understand that. That's one of the reasons why now I wouldn't play in the Premier League because I do understand you do look to play at every opportunity, but I just think risk and reward. There is such little reward. Even if he takes a good touch, he's probably still going long after that. So the fact that then he's obviously miscontrolled it, it's gone in the goal, he's paid the ultimate penalty. I'll be really interested to see what he does next time he has a similar situation because I do think there is still a time and a place where you do just put your foot through it.
Pass away from the goal as well. That's what we were always told as kids.
There you go. Very true. So let's just pin blame on the defender. Leave it at that. Put a nice little bow on it and we move on. I want to touch on the other two as well. I felt sorry for Joe Fryer because I know he's had some real tough time with injuries. Really highly rated young goalkeeper who is now at Swindon Town. And it was horrible because it was early on in the game. Ball passed back and it just looked like his legs buckled under him a little bit. As he's gone to clear it, he just didn't quite get his footing. I think he might have slipped, it looked like, and the balls then just trickled past him into the goal. And of course, that was 1-0. I think John Sheridan's first game in charge ended up losing the game 3-0. So not a particularly nice evening for him. Again, we've all been there. Certainly if it was a slip, it is just one of those things, but a horrible moment for Joe Fryer. And the other one I want to touch on because I think it's harsh. And the reason I think it's harsh, and for those that haven't seen it, Croatian goalkeeper, come for the corner, good decision, makes a good catch, and as he's on his way down, it hits the head. The ball's in his hands, if you can picture this, and it hits the head of one of his defenders.
Didn't catch it though, did he?
Well, he did. He near enough had control of it.
Didn't
Not
he?
Full control. It's kind of... Right, here's the example I'm going to use. We're going to move over to NFL. So when the running back is running with the American football and it only takes a little nudge of the football and it knocks it out and it's a fumble and they all go crazy and the opposition pick it up and run for a touchdown. Kind of like that for me, where he caught it, as good as caught it. Maybe not got full control, but he's got it. And if his stupid defender wasn't in the way and stood there, then he just brings the ball down and they play on and probably go up the other end. But the fact the defender stood there, now, I can't blame the defender too much. He's trying to protect the keeper in the first part of it. But then, of course, he becomes a nuisance in phase two. The ball breaks, they score, they lose the game. Last minute as well, wasn't it? So lose the game 3-2 to Portugal. So no, I feel a bit sorry for the goalkeeper on this one because I do think that we've all had that where you catch a cross, you bring in the ball down while it's in your hands and somebody's there. And of course, if someone's there, you're going to drop the ball. It's going to pop out.
You have mentioned NFL there, so I'm going to quickly reference DeAndre Hopkins. Cardinals wide receiver who pulled off one of the most incredible TD catches this week. Everybody's been talking about it. There have been some tweets as well, and it's suddenly gone into what can goalkeepers learn about other sports? Can we learn from DeAndre Hopkins here? We've just got to touch on it because an incredible moment that has gone viral.
It has. And we've got to touch on it as well because I think this has been the most niche episode we have ever done. We have gone into the depths of Albanian football and now we're moving over to the NFL to talk about goalkeeping. But yeah, it was. Again, it is worth checking out on Twitter because it is a phenomenal catch. He's got three guys around him. And I love the fact that you refer to it as a TD, as if we know what we're talking about. But it was a fantastic touchdown. But yeah, look, it is worth checking out because what it made me think is he's catching that. He's got three guys surrounding. it is effectively coming and catching a cross when you're surrounded by Akin Fenwa, Peter Crouch, Duncan Ferguson. Who else can I throw into this mix of big strikers?
Andy Carroll.
Any others?
You should probably throw Shearer in the mix, I would say.
Shearer, I mean, he's not that much of a presence.
Brilliant in the air, no?
No, that's true. He is good in the air. So is Cristiano Ronaldo. Let's throw him in there.
Okay.
But this was, it's an epic catch. Do check it out.
So we don't want to dwell too much on my name here. And I'm going to bring up someone who I'm quite reluctant to mention on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, because I believe there's only space for one Beadle in this town.
Jeremy.
But James Beadle, you're going to get a mention. The Charlton Athletic goalkeeper who was a hero in the FA Youth Cup this week against Gillingham. They progress to the next round as a result of Beadle being the hero. I have to say, I was reading the report and I quite like this, because with Jimmy Appiah netting Charlton's 10th penalty, the Gillingham player stepped up only for Beadle to make the save and be the hero, sparking scenes of jubilation for the boys in red. I can get on board with that.
Yeah, it was always going to be tough for Gillingham when Beadle's about. And it was, a fantastic...
Flashbacks to school. Oh, no. Actually, you know what? I'm going to just quickly dwell on this.
Go on.
Because being a Beadle, it's not the most common surname. And Jeremy Beadle was the Beadle growing up.
Mm.
And you always thought there's space here to be the next big Beadle on the block. Along comes Gary Beadle, the actor who played Paul Truman in EastEnders. Along comes Gaz Beadle, who went stratospheric with his fame from Geordie Shore.
Mm.
And now there's James Beadle.
Mm. I mean, you're lucky if you're top 10. I mean, again, just to add to what has been the most niche podcast that we've done to date and to focus on some things that really aren't very important when it comes to goalkeeping. But yes, James Beadle indeed will be, I would say, a bigger name than Jeremy Beadle. He's certainly got the potential to be doing brilliantly well at Charlton. One of the young lads that I work with, so I wanted to give him a little bit of love because he was the hero for Charlton. Great penalty save, top hand save, dove to his right, clawed it out with his left hand. Fantastic save. But just to mention that he's been doing very well for Charlton. He's also been away with England again last week for the under-17s, and has had a very good season for Charlton so far. They've had a positive start to the season, their youth team. Yeah, a young lad that's certainly worth looking out for. Fantastic attitude, and I was delighted for him the other night.
As am I. Of course, I am joshing. Wonderful news for James Beadle. We're going to finish, Richard, on the news that EFL clubs are permitted to have 5 substitutes now in league games. Championship clubs to name up to 9 substitutes in their matchday squad. League 1 and League 2 clubs to name up to 7 substitutes in their matchday squad. Some clubs, your bigger clubs, are happy with this, just like the Premier League clubs that also want this rule to be enforced in the Premier League. Some lesser-known clubs, clubs with smaller squads. I was listening to Neil Warnock, the Middlesbrough boss, earlier on today, and he was saying, no, we voted against this because we haven't got a big enough squad for this to benefit us. He said, sometimes I don't even bring on my 3 subs. I might make 1 or 2 changes. I'm not going to need to make 5 changes, whereas those clubs with the bigger squads are probably going to benefit from this.
Yeah, do you know what? I see both sides of this. The reason that I like this is just the fact there's so many injuries at the moment. And I don't know whether, I'd love to see the stats on this, whether this is just a perspective that I've got, but it just seems like there's so many injuries this season. And that will be because there's a glut of games. There was very little in terms of a break in the summer. Of course, with everything that's been going on in the world, it's not like anyone's gone anywhere to relax or do what have you. So I know for a lot of players, it's just been a really difficult start to the season. So the way that I see it is by having the extra couple of subs, hopefully it will reduce the injuries. That's the only real part that I'm too concerned about. I can see why then certain clubs, and Neil Warnock is probably a good example, because of the way in which his Middlesbrough team are playing and they're grinding out some results, in fairness. They're doing very, very well. A very Neil Warnock-esque team, it has to be said, and he's getting a lot of success with them early on. So I can see why for him and the way in which he's got that team playing, they wouldn't want the fresh legs coming on over and over and over because of the way they play. I guess that could be an argument. Look, for me, all I'm concerned about is the welfare of the players. I know even goalkeepers, a lot of goalkeepers are going down injured at the moment, more than usual as far as I'm concerned. So you'd think the extra subs should have a positive impact on that side of things.
Is this going to bring renewed hope to the number 3 as well? Because it's highly likely that we're going to start seeing 2 goalkeepers on the bench again, aren't we? But there is a flip side to this, because if you are a number 3 and you know that you're not going to be involved on a Saturday, you are going to live your life in a certain way in the days leading up to that, knowing that you're not going to play. Now, it's, again, unlikely that you'll get to play in that game, but you are going to be on the bench, which means you kind of have to be in the shape that you should be. Do you know what I mean? I just think that, I'm not saying that people don't live the life they should do as a footballer, but I think if you know that you're not going to be playing, you might go out, you might have a drink before a match day on that Friday that's not going to hurt you. But now that you are going to be on the bench, you kind of aren't able to do that.
Yeah, you're spot on. I think there's, you know, the moment you know you're a number three, even if you're travelling, then you might not follow. Well, in fact, you wouldn't. Of course, if you're not in the squad, technically, you're not working the next day. So you would just do what you might do on an ordinary night, which might be a slightly later night. It might be just not preparing for a game. But of course, if you are in the squad for lots of these clubs, certainly Premier League, Championship, there will be extra bonuses attached to being on the bench, which some of these clubs won't like that either, because that's another thing. A couple more substitutes. Some will get appearance fees for sitting on the bench. You know, I always used to get an appearance fee. It sounds backwards in some ways, but I used to get an appearance fee for sitting on the bench. So there's going to be more bonuses they're paying out. So a lot of these goalkeepers will be happy if they're on the bench, because according to their contract, that might mean that they get a certain bonus. The other question is, if this does continue longer term, do we now start seeing a number four goalkeeper? Because of course, if you've got three that are going to be involved in the squad, well, then you need a good number four as well. So it wouldn't surprise me if in time that becomes a thing in the Premier League.
Get him out of retirement.
I tell you what, there's still a role for me. Let's do it.
Richard, nothing but a pleasure as always. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away!